So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time. Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review man.
Welcome to Review Away. John Pollock here alongside the man, the myth, the three-stripe master, Wei Ting, here in the house.
Yes.
What's going on, Wei?
I'm on my way to my red belt, obviously.
Just finished my my read-through for SNL.
Yeah.
I'm going to be going down to New York soon to do a full full audition.
I understand you have a movie deal coming up too in the works.
There's a three-picture deal that may or may not be on the table. Very table, actually, that I have my coffee on.
Nice.
I'm gonna try not to spill. What's going on, Wei? It's cold in here, isn't it?
It's freezing. I think I'm coming down with the cold.
I was so sick last week. I don't know if you recall. You came over to my house Tuesday morning for Review of Raw, and my throat was a mess. And I fought that off by like Wednesday night, and then I woke up Thursday morning with the worst cold that lasted all weekend. Like, my immune system's fucking shot. Yeah. I need to work out more. I'm dedicating myself to jiu-jitsu moving forward. Okay. You are really my lifeline to life.
Oh, it's not really working for me. I mean, if anything, it's probably making me even more sick because I'm weakening my immune system all the time.
How do you strengthen your immune system? What are some key urban legends?
I imagine diet is very important, and getting enough sleep is also very important.
I know you have irregular sleep patterns, but do you fall asleep typically pretty easily?
Depends. Like, I mean, if I'm doing some physical activity during the day, then yeah, I sleep like a baby at night. But sometimes, I mean, it depends, honestly.
I have a hard time falling asleep.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, it's that all that coffee that you're drinking.
I don't know if it's the coffee, because I usually... The latest I'll have a coffee is like now. It's like 3:30 in the afternoon. Tonight is I will go to sleep at roughly 2 in the morning or so. Maybe it should have worn off by then.
Maybe it's all that wrestling that you watch.
It could be. It could be. I find that I am constantly, when I go to sleep, I need to listen to something before I go to sleep. And then I'm thinking about all the things I have to do the next day.
Mm.
And I haven't mastered a way to kind of shut that part of my brain off, to just not think about what I need to do the next day.
Yeah.
And then I start worrying that, man, if I can't fall asleep, I'm going to be so tired in the morning, and that thus prolongs me falling asleep.
Yeah, that's a problem. I think the key is to not do anything that is too exciting. And maybe, I don't know what type of podcast you listen to. If you're listening to a podcast like this one, good luck getting to sleep. You're going to be really excited.
Yeah, you want to pop out of bed and throw in that 91 Rumble VHS and watch.
You know what I like to do is I like to read, actually, and read really boring things.
Do you read a book? Because I hear reading like an electronic device is actually bad for trying to fall asleep.
I could see that because of the you're looking at a light bulb, basically, in a TV screen.
Tissue and his
who?
He runs an LED light company. Maybe he can.
Who are you talking about?
Who? Gordon.
Oh.
Tissue.
Okay. I don't know why you're calling him that. He has an actual Chinese name.
How do you pronounce it?
Qishou.
I thought that's what I said.
No.
I guess not.
You said tissue.
When is Gordon going to come on this show?
Whenever you want him to, if it's relevant. I mean, what
we're starting
to
build up a little bank of guests in and around the city that would like to come on the show.
Is that right?
Yes.
Like who?
Local comedian who is about to go abroad, Dylan Gott, has made a request to come on the show. I think he'd be a lot of fun. When I was talking to him on the weekend, he's worried that the bar has been set rather high with Damien.
Do you know this Dylan, like in person?
I've met him, yes.
Oh, okay.
I was hanging out with him on Friday, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
So he's
Catch 23 was on at Comedy Bar.
Right, okay. Yeah, absolutely. We're always an open door here.
It's actually closed right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Except when it's closed.
It's not locked, so you can barge in at any time.
Yes, as many people do.
Yep.
I predict we'll get two run-ins during this show.
Mm. Yeah, I imagine people are get sick of just hearing our voices. So, I mean, maybe a series of guest appearances might be in order.
Who would be someone you would love to have? Not like your obvious pick of like Vince McMahon. Someone who is accessible within this city of Toronto.
Okay.
That you would think would make a good guest for this particular show, assuming that they are a wrestling fan. Fuck it. Just assume everyone in Toronto is a wrestling fan.
You know
that
what?
Is within traveling distance here.
I would think that even the non-wrestling fans would make for a better review. So I would probably think the furthest thing away from a wrestling fan, maybe with accessible, maybe your mother.
My mom?
Yeah. I think that would be a lot of fun.
What about your dad?
Well, my dad doesn't really speak English
well.
So he wouldn't be able to contribute too much. Usually when he watches wrestling, he just picks up on anytime he sees a woman and a man, he's like, is that his girlfriend? Like, are they in a relationship?
Sensational Sherry gets on her knees in front of the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, is that his girlfriend? Is that her boyfriend that she's slapping?
He's concerned about the relationships. He wants to go a step further. The connection? People are always dying for connections. It's a normal brain pattern to him, make connections.
Yeah, I guess to him, like whenever he sees a man and a woman together in a wrestling ring, they're in some type of relationship, romantic relationship. So I don't know. But yeah, I think your mom would make for a great guest.
I think my dad would be even better.
Okay, sure. Maybe on Father's Day.
My dad does these things now where he'll send out these emails from work he'll send it to like my sister or something. But no matter who he sends it to, he copies the rest of us, like my mom, my brother, and me, on an email, and he never writes our names. He just says, "Hey, KP, it's DP." Copying JP, and he'll just like have code names for
us. Put initials.
Yeah, and he just puts initials. You'd be WT, WTT.
Why does he do that?
I don't know. Maybe he's in a hurry. He needs to abbreviate.
Is he afraid that somebody's looking at his emails? Maybe.
I don't know if he's hiding much other than our full name.
Okay, so your dad communicates to you via email.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, he does.
Cool.
He'll call every now and then,
but usually it's hey JP.
Hey, JP. Sometimes I don't get invited on the copy. Sometimes I'm not copied on the emails.
Wow. You're a very technologically savvy family.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You just finished this extravaganza. Did you start this morning?
Yes, I did.
Started Monday. It's Wednesday now.
Yeah. It took me 2 days.
Wow. It felt that long, did it?
No, I finished it in one morning.
Is this the latest you've ever left a full-length pay-per-view to?
I mean, it would have to be, right? I did it basically 3 hours before the show. So I've done this before, too. You know what it is? I just feel like, man, I wanted just my weekend, basically, and I wanted to leave. It sometimes feels like work watching these shows, and so I wanted to leave it till I was working.
How was your weekend?
It was okay. It was pretty boring. I should have watched the show.
You should have come hung out with us. On Friday, we went to Catch 23.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, we all came here to the office to watch Strike Force.
Right.
Bunch of people here for it.
How did you like Strike Force?
Eh.
I watched the fights afterwards.
Did you watch all of it or just the main card?
Pretty much watched everything except I fast-forwarded through the main event.
It was just not a lot of very competitive fights. I mean, some good performances by guys. Main event I was entertained by, a bit of a surprise with Tarek Safadine winning. Yeah. I just, you know, it was a it was a show that, to me, the promotion, it kind of went out with a bit of a whimper, which is what the promotion really has been for a year outside of, you know, Ronda Rousey being someone that got a lot of interest.
Who are you most excited to see? Or, you know, name a number of fighters that you're excited to see come into the UFC.
Well, certainly Ronda Rousey in the women's division I'm very keen to see. One that's under the radar is Jacare Souza.
Yep.
Submitted Ed Herman. Looked fantastic. I think he's someone that could really make a dent in that 185 division. So that one I'm really looking forward to. Luke Rockhold.
Luke Rockhold is a champion, right?
He's the 185-pound champion. Gilbert Melendez, who will probably get the first shot amongst the Strikeforce crew. He'll likely get a lightweight shot against Benson Henderson. So that's a real good addition. He'll, I think, fare very well in the lightweight division. And outside of that,
Do you think Josh Barnett comes in?
Barnett's an interesting one. Absolutely, Daniel Cormier. Yeah. That's a guy that's going to be this guy could have a monster year in 2013. Josh Barnett is an interesting one because we talked about this on the weekend on The Law. I really think this guy could be such a great fit for Bellator and TNA.
Mm-hmm.
I think he comes in and he's everything you want in King Mo, but he's ready to go now. You wouldn't have to be worrying about teaching this guy from scratch. I mean, we joke about Joseph Park learning in 4 weeks in storyline to become a wrestler. It's not too much far from what they're expecting of Mo here, where he came in, he signed late summer, I believe, and he's been down in OVW since September, October.
He's the real-life Joseph Park.
He really is, except he's never on television, ever. Yeah. And he's fighting next week.
Yes. Josh Barnett would absolutely be perfect, but I imagine you were mentioning earlier that he got paid how much for his Strikeforce show?
$250,000.
And is that a figure that Bellator can even comprehend?
Well, the other option, though, is if UFC is not interested in this guy, Josh Barnett is going to be hard-pressed to find anyone that's going to pay him $250,000. I think Barnett is trying to position himself kind of in that role that Fedor did years ago, where there's going to be, inevitably, a bunch of startups who are going to get some capital together, and they're going to say, well, who can we get that is outside of the UFC with a bit of a name? Mm-hmm. And Josh Barnett is right at the top of that list right now and kind of positions himself as your kind of free agent that a startup can grab and maybe throw some stupid money at.
Yeah.
But that's a risk because you don't know what's going to happen. Is World Series of Fighting going to go after a Josh Barnett and get some money behind them? It's tough versus what is guaranteed now, and you know Bellator will be around a year from now.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think really Barnett's even that big of a name in North America.
To be honest. I mean, relatively speaking, he's someone that to the fight audience, people are aware of, but not someone
I'm actually surprised Strikeforce is even paying him that much.
He got a real sweetheart deal there between that, and it left him with the open to he could still do wrestling overseas.
Mm.
So good for him.
Yeah. Have you seen any of his pro wrestling?
Yes, I have.
And how is he?
He's really good. Huh. I mean, he's someone that could work a very strong style and something that's very different. It would be, I think, there's the right mix of guys in TNA that he, I mean, him and Kurt Angle, him and Joe.
Oh, they'd be great.
Yeah, there's lots of
He could promo. Options.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And he's very much, could blend into North American pro wrestling, I think, very easily.
Yeah.
So Josh Barnett,
signed
with Bellator.
You know, from what we've seen of King Mo, I just think it'll take a long, long time before he gets anywhere near a level ready enough. I mean, beyond maybe doing like a special enforcer type of thing.
Are you going to start watching Bellator on Thursday
nights?
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, provided that we don't have to record our podcast right afterwards. But yeah, I'm going to start watching it. When are they doing this reality show?
It hasn't even started filming yet. I think they're going to start filming the first week of February. So you're probably looking at probably.
Why wouldn't they have a reality show to debut right when they're starting off?
I think the idea is they want to get people. I think they want to push one product right now, and that being the live shows on Thursday nights, rather than have two separate shows to promote right now. And hopefully you build your audience on Thursday nights and then segue them over for the reality show.
And how long are these live shows to start?
2 hours.
2 hours? Okay.
Yeah.
So really you're looking at about 4 hours if you're watching Impact itself, which is a long time to sit.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how much crossover there is. Yeah. What is your prediction? Let's say, TNA average week, 1.2, 1.3 million viewers. How many viewers does Bellator average for week number one?
I think there's going to be a lot of curiosity, just a lot of buzz and a lot of people seeing, hey, what is this Bellator product about? I've heard a lot about it. So I'd say in the first week, maybe, I don't know, 0.8, maybe 0.7, 0.8.
Yeah.
Which I think would be really good for Bellator.
Yeah, that's about a million or so viewers.
But following that, I just see that as too much of a commitment to spend, you know, tell a TNA audience, hey, you've already sat for 2 hours, here's another 2 hours for something that you might not necessarily be as big of a fan of. But nonetheless, it's somewhat related. I don't know. I think a 2 hour show following Impact is not necessarily the right way to go. I mean, you know, we've seen with The Ultimate Fighter, with Raw as a lead-in, I think you need, wrestling fans are interested in storytelling. Storytelling more so than, you know, an MMA fight, and that's why I think a reality show would have been the better option to start off with. That way, you get people interested in the fighting afterwards.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, if all things being equal, you have that reality show to kind of introduce people. It's not like these Bellator fighters are household names.
Nope.
They're people that you're going to have to introduce to people. I think for wrestling fans, they'd probably be aware of King Mo. Realistically, that's about it. And unless you can pick apart the fighters that have done cameos at the Impact Zone, it's not like these are names that really jump out at you. You really need that starting off point. Superior Spider-Man issue number one, so to speak, approach to this episode.
Yes, there you go.
Well, Mr. Ting, the Royal Rumble is just a few weeks away, so we're going to transport ourselves back to January the 19th of 1991, a Saturday pay-per-view.
Why was that?
I don't know why it was on a Saturday. They used to run the occasional pay-per-view on a Saturday. I remember they did that, I believe, for the Rumble in 94. I remember it being strange that this pay-per-view is on a Saturday. From Miami, Florida, the Miami Arena, which is where SmackDown was last week.
Oh, very
in Miami, not at the same venue, I don't believe. So, I was not watching pro wrestling at this time. In fact, I had never watched this event before in my life.
No, me neither.
So look at that. We are watching this with completely fresh eyes and no bias.
Were you aware of the war at this time?
As a 6-year-old, 5-year-old, no, I was not aware of the war during this time period. But we should mention this. The WWF, they introduced the heel Sergeant Slaughter back in the summer of 1990 as this Iraqi sympathizer who the U.S. was certainly at odds with. And later that year, war broke out. This was the infamous Gulf War. And
They introduced the character before the war.
Yes, before the war actually began. And this got so much criticism at the time for just being of the utmost in bad taste. And it resulted in a lot of, business, you know, the disadvantages for this company. They ran a Saturday night's main event shortly after this show, and it tanked in the numbers as compared to prior ones. A lot of people were turned off by this. A lot of people thought this is just the most exploitative company in the world to be using the war here to push their own characters. Do you fundamentally agree or disagree with this kind of a direction the
company
takes?
I mean, issues like this are what makes pro wrestling so interesting, right? Pro wrestling always seems to be, there's always a discussion about what is too much and what is just good business. Whether or not, I mean, I can't say I was really personally affected by this war too much. I mean, you know, like yourself, I was 6 years old living in Canada at the time, recently coming to this country. Didn't really know much about what was going on, so I can't speak about who these people that might have been offended would feel. Is this too much? Certainly by watching this, it didn't seem that way. It just, I mean, come on, it seemed like a comedy thing.
I think we're also somewhat desensitized in that if we were watching it this time, this probably would be territory that would be very taboo. But I look at this with 2013 perspective on my side, and just look at that. I have been offended by many things in pro wrestling,
yes.
And this one I don't know if I necessarily put up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I am somewhat swayed by how much heat this got in this arena with Sergeant Slaughter, who, whether you agreed or not with this storyline, he was a very incredible heel at a time when this was a sensitive topic,
right?
And thus, that's an easy button to push.
Is this really unprecedented in wrestling, though? I mean,
no.
We've seen in the past so many things, like, you know, all the Russian characters,
the fallout of World War II with every Nazi heel. I mean, that was Fritz von Erich's character,
right,
before his reformation as a born-again Christian.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And really, I mean, it depends how you're just, I mean, is Captain America, is that going too far? I mean, the initial comic book, I mean, you're just really telling stories about the American heroes here, and of course you need a bad guy to rebel against.
So that was the backdrop for this very patriotic Royal Rumble, and mm-hmm. we know the WWF, when it comes to patriotism, they sure love to pump their chest out, and that was certainly on display here.
Yeah, I like watching these old shows because, '91 Royal Rumble, I wasn't really expecting anything out of the ordinary, but the first image that we see on the show.
The American flag being yep. waved in silence, and then the national anthem is played, and the war actually ended about a month after this show, so who knows, maybe the Royal Rumble helped quell...
Must have been the ultimate. It would have been the ultimate warrior who stopped the war.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
So now the version I watched, Wei, was the edited version that I believe they had played on 24/7. Yeah. And there were a lot of changes here, including Gene Okerlund recapping or running down all of the participants to this very cheesy musical theme that was not the standard Royal Rumble theme, but you can watch online, as I played off the top, the original with Vince McMahon and the classic Royal Rumble theme music.
It's time for Rumble! It's time for the Royal Rumble! Participants include the immortal Hulk Hogan, the Hitman Bret Hart, Animal from Legion of Doom, The Undertaker, The Tugboat, the model Rick Martel, Mr. Perfect, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, the Earthquake, Saba Simba, the British Bulldog, Paul Roma, Tito Santana, Butch the Bushwhacker, Jake the Snake Roberts, the Warlord, Demolition Smash, Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich, Hawk of Legion of Doom, Superfly, Luke the Bushwhacker, The Anvil, Demolition Crush, Dino Bravo, Greg the Hammer Valentine, Hercules, Shane Douglas, Nasty Boy Brian Knob, Haku, and the Macho King Randy Savage. It's every man for himself in the Royal Rumble. Plus, World Wrestling Federation champion, the Ultimate Warrior, defends the title against the number one contender, Sergeant Slaughter, front and center. And then in tag team action, the Rhodes family meet Virgil and Ted DiBiase. The Big Boss Man squares off against the Barbarian. And then the tag team of the Rockers meet the Orient Express led by Mr. Fuji. It's time to rumble!
Quite honestly, if every year until the man passes away, if Vince McMahon were to do this open for the Royal Rumble, zero complaint. This is always my favorite pay-per-view theme, was this Royal Rumble tune they had, and Vince McMahon just roaring like a madman about all the participants in the Royal Rumble.
This is the one that I watched. I mean, why would they edit this? Why would they change this?
I have no clue. No clue.
They must own this music.
It had to have been in-house production. There's no way this was some commercial theme. It had to have been just Jim Johnson going into the studio one day and banging it out, because they used that for years. It was just this standard instrumental.
So I really wonder why they would change something like that. But yes, absolutely. These openings are just classic. Just all these names, all these legendary characters announced in succession, and just Vince going crazy.
So I wonder what year Okerlund revoiced these. I imagine it was like sometime after 24/7 was launched.
Yeah.
Because he was just, you know, the Earthquake and rolling the R's on Paul Roma's name. It's like this guy was just like having fun with this. And of course, the legendary character Saba Simba was a part of this Royal Rumble.
Oh, right. Well, talk about controversy.
Yes. Xenophobia and race relations on high analysis mm-hmm. for us on this show. The announcers for this show, Gorilla Monsoon and Roddy Piper, with Piper at the start just yelling about how proud he is and calls this the rumble in the jungle as Monsoon wearing a red sports coat that only Monsoon could pull off.
Yes, yes. I've never heard Roddy Piper actually do any commentary before. How long was he in this position?
Oh, he was in it for a while. After Jesse left, he was eventually slotted in, and he was doing Superstars for a while. He did a handful of pay-per-views. A lot of people liked his style. I found that he was just a little
too much.
Too Roddy Piper.
It was just, okay.
I told you what's gonna go on! And that was it for this too much. I apologize if I blew someone's eardrums
out
there.
You just destroyed my ears.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's exactly it. There's like
there's that fine line of a guy who's so used to cutting promos now being a color guy, and it can be a tough transition. Not that this guy was horrendous. Well, I've heard way worse. But
I honestly don't doubt that there must be other substances in play here too. Just for a man to carry on in
allegedly.
If you have a 1 to 10, this man was a 15 all throughout this 3 hours. How can anybody maintain that? I have to question.
Were you there that night in Nunavut when Scott D'Amore did his impression of the WWF stars of the 80s doing their promos for all the different cities?
No.
It was so good.
Yeah?
I can't do the impressions. I mean, he did the impressions, but he just went like one guy by one guy cutting these promos, and it was just amazing. Yeah, just right. Fucking incredible. And Piper was one of his finest.
Okay, cool. I'm ashamed I missed that.
What were you doing? Were you asleep? There was no darkness. There was no reason to sleep.
I was very likely trying to sleep because it would have been like 2 a.m.
Yeah, that was the weirdest place to get accustomed to sleeping. I think the first night I just didn't sleep because it was bright out the entire time. It's like my body is not functioning to sleep right now.
In Nunavut, which is near the Arctic, I suppose, for people who don't know.
Google map it.
There were only like 3 hours of darkness the entire night, at that season at least. And it's like the opposite during the summer, isn't it? Or the
yes,
winter?
Yeah, yeah. It flips and then it's nothing but dark.
So weird.
Very strange. Yeah. By the way, Fight Network original documentary, coming soon.
Coming soon.
I think if we say it publicly, that lights a fire for
us.
Is
that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to get to it. It's going to happen this year.
Coming soon.
Yep. All right. So there we go. We do our intro and then our opening match. First, from Japan, Kaito and Tanaka, the Orient Express, alongside Mr. Fuji. Yeah. From Japan.
From Japan. That's the Orient, is it not?
Yes, it is the Orient.
Part of the Orient, at least.
The land of the rising sun and the land of salt, as I've learned as a wrestling fan growing up.
Yes. What else?
Mist. Sneak attacks, as Gorilla Monsoon would so eloquently coin, a Pearl Harbor job.
Oh, they invented it.
Yeah. Hitting from behind.
Yeah. Yeah, well, totally. Yes.
Quite a lot. Imagine being a child with a blank slate of life, and just you're brought up in wrestling. What values would be instilled? What prejudices would be formed? And what overall attitudes one would interpret from simply pro wrestling uprising.
Oh, America's
upbringing.
America's the best.
Well,
absolutely.
That's fact, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Yes.
What else would I, maybe a policeman, would, in nighttime, at the night times, they would come to wrestle in matches. Mounties would carry cattle prods. I don't know.
That was always potential for WWF when they were branching out, is to try and create some sitcoms of, well, what do these guys do during the day before they get off work to come wrestle?
Oh, that I would watch. Absolutely.
I would totally watch that.
Yeah.
Just like every week, like an original, 22-minute episode on the big boss man going to work.
Yep.
Well, 5 o'clock. Got to get down to the Miami Arena tonight. Mm-hmm. It's the Royal Rumble.
The life of Lord Tensai.
What is the life of Lord Tensai?
Trying to get accustomed to Western culture.
Trying to get back to New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. His bad intentions.
Hmm.
Anyway, taking on the Rockers here, Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels. The Express attack them as they pose on the turnbuckles. Pearl Harbored them right in front of the referees. But the Rockers immediately make a comeback, and the Express go to the floor and then take a set of topes from the Rockers. This was a this was a style that I think the WWF fan was still very much getting accustomed to. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a style that was still very very rare when you look up and down this roster. Yeah, I mean, just seeing a suicide dive was something to marvel at.
Absolutely.
Tanaka here hits a flying shoulder block to Michaels, and they get the advantage. There's a very cool spot here where Tanaka runs over Michaels, and then as well as Kato, then bumps into Kato. We saw a sleeper spot by Michaels to Tanaka. That got broken by Kato, and who was Paul Diamond under a mask. There were cross bodies off the top to the floor by the Rockers. Then they guillotined Michaels on the top rope. Got heat on him, and Michaels, I thought, was just such a great babyface when it came to selling and selling. And anyway, they continue this beatdown. The Express then get, it looked like a belt from Fuji or something, and tried to clothesline him, but Michaels blocked it and hit a double clothesline, makes the big tag. The crowd erupts for Marty Jannetty getting the hot tag, and then there's a slingshot by Tanaka to Jannetty into a sunset flip, and Jannetty pins Kato 18 and a half minutes here. And this was a great, great match. And this is one of the, a lot of people look at this match. I've always heard people refer to this as one of the best Royal Rumble matches, and a very, very strong match, especially when you're judging this in 1991 at the time.
Yeah, and I think that's important to think about, because, I mean, if this match were to happen now, first of all, this crowd reaction was incredible.
Very hot crowd in Miami.
Throughout the entire night. But, I mean, if you were to look at a lot of the moves now and compare it to a lot of these, maybe even like a Ring of Honor match or something, a lot of it looks kind of sloppy and not as technically sound as people would expect today. But at the time, you have to think about, you know, probably nobody's ever seen this type of tag team choreography or the, you know, just the pace that these guys were wrestling at.
Sean Mooney is in the back with Randy Savage, the Macho King, and he calls himself the greatest WWF champion of all time, and he has a promise from Sergeant Slaughter that should he win the title tonight from the Ultimate Warrior, he would grant Savage the first title shot, and he says that same commitment is going to come from the Ultimate Warrior in a few seconds because Sherry is going to bait Ultimate Warrior. Bait him. And immediately we go to Sensational Sherry coming out to the crowd, onto the interview podium inside of the arena, and she is with Mean Gene Okerlund, and she is here to make a public challenge to the Ultimate Warrior, calling him out, and the Ultimate Warrior comes out with a USA leather jacket. Ultimate Warrior, the stylish one himself. Just everything about this man is just like 1985 with a giant highlighter in pink over the letters 19.
1991 might as well have been 1985.
Why not? Those numbers, 1985, synonymous with this man, the Ultimate Warrior. And Sherry begins flirting with one Jim Hellwig and then takes his jacket off. This got extremely uncomfortable, extremely quick. And then she starts kissing him, and he freaks out at this. And then she gets down on her knees to start begging. Where this was going, I don't want to assume.
This was really risque for 1991.
This was very risque. And it all builds up to the Ultimate Warrior spitting out, literally spitting out the words, "No!" And the crowd roars, "Yes!" Fuck Sherry. Yeah. Not literally, but figuratively. Yeah. And he goes to leave, and Randy Savage is shown in the back just freaking out. He is shocked at this turn of events.
How could he
turn? That his hired prostitute could not come through in the clutch. And says that he is going after the Ultimate Warrior right now, and he runs out to the interview podium, sprinting, just sprinting out. So no title shot should Ultimate Warrior retain the title tonight.
I thought Sherry was really good.
Sherry was phenomenal.
I've always quite enjoyed her. And clearly, the Ultimate Warrior has no interest in sex. He's beyond sex. He's asexual.
Maybe had the comic book gone longer, it would have delved into that more. The sexual nature of the Ultimate Warrior.
The Warrior comic book.
Yes.
Oh, I've never read it.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Okay.
Next up, we go from a match that is regarded as one of the better matches in Rumble history to one that is not. The Barbarian, accompanied by Bobby Heenan, against the Big Boss Man. Speaking of daytime sitcoms, The Barbarian, a man who hunts food and kills animals for clothing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something like somehow the Barbarian made its way into an actual sitcom.
Oh, no, that would have been something. The Barbarian remains on the floor when the bell rings. Then they fight on the floor. Barbarian is sent into the steel post, going shoulder first into it. There was just tons and tons of stalling here. And Bossman's leg gets tied in the ropes, and he's hanging upside down, and Piper's just irate here over Heenan hitting Bossman with cheap shots. Then there's a slam that Bossman sells like he was electrocuted. I think that was the intent here that he was trying to convey to the audience. Then a bear hug with, if you are a new listener, believe me, is my absolute favorite hold in pro wrestling, the bear hug.
Yeah.
I love this. The longer a bear hug lasts, the more I am just energized as a match goes on.
How could you not? This was exhilarating. Five minutes of men embracing on a pay-per-view.
This was a five-star bear hug. Bossman fights out of it, but then gets knocked to the mat. So Barbarian lifts up Bossman. He takes one arm. He takes his other arm. He connects them around Bossman, and the bear hug is back on. And Bossman gets out by biting him and then hitting an enziguri. Monsoon, to his credit here, I believe that this man watching paint dry could call and make it exciting. He just is, he's excited. He is excited because pro wrestling is happening and he is watching it with his own eyes. They bump heads, both go down, there's a pin attempt. Barbarian grabs the bottom rope and the match continues. Then Barbarian delivered this pile driver to the Big Boss Man. In all my years of pro wrestling, I have never seen a man take a pile driver on his back. He landed on his back upon taking this pile driver. I don't know if he didn't trust Barbarian or thought, you know what, how can I make this possibly kill me? But this looked incredibly awkward. Bossman then reversed a cross body off the top and pins Barbarian. 14 minutes and 15 seconds these two went. And Heenan runs to the back away from the Bossman. I can't believe someone wrote down 14 minutes and 15 seconds attached to these two and their names on a pay-per-view. This needed 5 minutes at most.
Hey, a lot of guys were in that Rumble match. Didn't really have much left over. But
oh,
this is pretty awful. But that said, this crowd just seemed to like everything. So I think it just goes to show the strength of this Bossman character and how much these fans were behind him to even bear this.
Then we go into the back, and Sean Mooney is joined by... That's one of my New Year's resolutions. I want to get Sean Mooney on a show.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to hunt him down. He is with Sergeant Slaughter and one of my favorite characters as a child when I used to rent, you know, this era of wrestling on VHS, General Adnan. Sheik Adnan L. Casey, some may remember, put into this role. Basically, let's make this guy look as much like Saddam Hussein as possible and cut promos that no one would understand. Me and my buddy Mike, my one wrestling fan I've mentioned many a time on this podcast, we used to always do General Adnan impressions to one another.
Well, let's hear one.
I used to, when the time is right, when okay. The time is right.
General Adnan.
And Slaughter says that if people think there's turmoil in the world, then wait until what I am going to do today. A real world war, not world war, but a Gulf war is going on here, is comparable to what Sergeant Slaughter will do in a 20x20 ring in the Miami Arena. Calls Warrior the ultimate puke, and he will be the new leader.
The new leader.
Okay. The new leader, leaving it very open-ended.
Right. A good promo from Slaughter, I thought.
Slaughter was great. Like, this is the most cartoonish heel that I don't know. I couldn't find this. You know, I can't find it too offensive today, but you know what? At a time when an actual war was going on and people were dying,
yes,
I can certainly see outrage.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a disconnect because we weren't living through this time. Well, we were living, but we weren't acknowledging anything that was going on at the age of six. So, Okerlund is then with the Ultimate Warrior. Let's try and recap what the Warrior said. He doesn't give. He only takes orders from the Warriors. He cites a desert where a foxhole will be created, and only those that are demented would follow Slaughter, and he will be the ultimate victor. I would give this a 6 out of 10 in terms of Warrior promos that were coherent.
You could actually understand what he meant?
I was a little lost on the foxhole and whether he was promising to murder this man and bury him as a bit of an analogy. But overall, I took it to mean that much like with Sherry, he does not give or take.
Okay. All right. As long as somebody understood, because I had no idea. All I heard was some random words, some foxholes, and then a snarl.
Do you want to do the snarl?
Not really.
No. So here we go. Third match. Ultimate Warrior against Sergeant Slaughter. Very odd positioning of this.
Yeah, I wonder why.
I think the idea was that they knew what they were going to be, what the finish of this was going to be, and have a cool-down period, so to speak, because this crowd was as hot for this match as any match you're going to get in this sized arena. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a rabid audience in Miami. Monsoon and Piper, they give this whole kind of moral about the fact that we fight for freedom, and therefore Sergeant Slaughter has the right to express himself, but we have the right to stop him. How I wish I majored in political science and used WWF in like my thesis paper.
Oh, you could do a whole
There's
course?
So much you could write about of growing up a WWF fan and applying it to real world conflict.
You could do a whole course on it.
I mean, Chris Bell kind of dabbled into that in the documentary about how who was to blame for the Iranian hostage crisis, and it was being settled in Madison Square Garden on January 23rd. No. Warrior runs down. Clotheslines both Adnan and Slaughter. Little known fact here, courtesy of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, General Adnan actually wore a bulletproof vest down to the ring for this match.
Really?
There was that amount of fear in the back of his head that he could be shot by a fan.
What if he was shot in the face?
Well, you know what? Then he would probably have died. What a story that would have been.
Yeah.
Saddam Hussein look-alike shot at wrestling event in Miami.
Yeah, not out of the question. I mean, come on. Monica Seles.
What? Monica Seles?
She was stabbed.
She was stabbed, yeah. She missed like a year and a half, 2 years after
she
that.
She could have died.
She could have died. She made a comeback.
Yes, she did.
Yeah. She was my favorite tennis player when I was like a little kid, and I'd watch like tennis every now and then. I was a big fan of her and Andre Agassi.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Legends.
Yep. And then Pete Sampras came along, but I wasn't as big on Pete Sampras. I always thought Andre Agassi was the man.
Is he still married to Steffi Graf?
Yeah, yeah. Think about those babies.
Yeah, just imagine the pressure on these kids. Or just imagine the genetics on these kids. They must be doing some crazy testing on all of them. Blood tests every week. Hey, how are you progressing?
Yeah, yeah. How's that swing coming along?
It's got to be. Maybe that was part of the agreement of them getting married. It's just so that they could try to have the most perfect tennis-ready babies.
Do you want to hear my Andre Agassi, Steffi Graf joke?
Absolutely.
You know how they... You know what they have in common?
I don't know.
Love. Come on, that's pretty good.
That's not bad.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's my tennis. That's all my tennis knowledge right there.
Oh, good.
I've given it all. All right. Let's get back to USA versus Iraq. Warrior runs down, clotheslines both men, and then he grabs the Iraqi flag. And it's dropped onto the mat here in the melee. And then he lifts the flag up, breaks it over his knee, and tears up the flag, ripping it in half as the crowd erupts and Adnan leaves to go to the back. They were getting Adnan the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah, what better way to... I mean, I think... I don't know. I don't know about this. I mean, on the one hand... If I was American and I was just like, fuck yeah, yes, tear that flag, we're the best, I probably would have been like that. But at the same time, I think about maybe an Iraqi American watching this. And
who's never killed anybody, who's never subscribed to any form of genocide.
At the same time, you know, like later on in the show, they're complaining that Sergeant Slaughter has desecrated an American flag. Well, you mean like what the Ultimate Warrior did earlier? An eye for an eye.
To be fair, Gene Okerlund did clarify that could only be a rumor. Otter, they actually wanted, as I recall, they were planning to do it on television and burn an American flag, and they were not allowed to go ahead with it. Like, that's technically illegal.
Could they have burned an Iraqi flag?
Well, what they did was they got a flagpole and they burned a Hulk Hogan shirt,
right,
to symbolize America.
Would it have been okay to burn a flag of another country, like Iraq?
I think they would have been okay with that.
Okay.
The radicals were going to do that once in WCW. As the Revolution. They were in the Revolution group prior to jumping to WWF, and they wanted to do an angle where they burnt an American flag on television, and
right,
the higher ups at Turner and AOL were like, "Fuck, you're doing that."
Yeah, I feel like if you're not going to be okay with other people doing this, I just hardly think that this is an action that a hero should be exhibiting, to tear somebody else's flag up. I mean, even though you're in war, I don't know. It's weird.
There's good guys and bad guys in this world, Way. And WWF is defining them.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
this was awesome.
Such an interesting company.
I liked this. Watching this, it was just so much fun. Here's the Ultimate Warrior coming in and tearing flags.
I love the idea, though, of taking, like, complex war and, you know, this giant, you know, it's a very complex discussion, and the WWF simplifying it down to
good guys and bad guys.
Exactly, and trying to make a storyline out of something complex,
listen,
and breaking it down to their opinions.
That's the history of propaganda, is just really trying to get people to rally behind your cause in the most basic terms, in the most basic and primal terms, and I don't know, this is just one example of many.
So the match begins again, like incredible heat here for this match. So Warrior's on the offensive, sends Slaughter into the corner and over to the floor. Sensational Sherry pops up at ringside and grabs the foot of Warrior, and then he chases her to the entranceway. And this is where Randy Savage sneak attacks Warrior and attacks him with this giant light stand. And the crowd is chanting USA. Very, very hot for this. And Savage...
Well, if you're not hot for this, you're not an American.
No, get the hell out of our country. Yeah. And Warrior is selling this, and apparently Earl Hebner gave him to the count of 406 to return to the ring, because this man took his sweet time getting back to the ring. How this was not a count-out, I don't know. To me, this was the second biggest blemish on the resume of Earl Hebner.
They did explain that Slaughter is stopping the count. Slaughter is distracting the referee to stop the count.
I don't understand how that works.
Yeah, you just, hey, don't.
These are the rules.
Yeah, but the reference.
Why didn't Caitlyn do that on TV last week when Eve left?
She should have. I thought this was clever. I think it's a nice little attention to detail. So often you see referees just either slow down a count or something, but here there's actually some reason for it.
Warrior makes it back at 405, and Slaughter is beating him down and applies the bear hug and then beats down on his lower back. Warrior starts his comeback, shaking the ropes and no-selling. And Sherry returns, to which Piper yells, "Get out of here, you witch!" And Sherry is on the apron. Warrior grabs her, tosses her into the ring, and then military presses her to the floor into the arms of Randy Savage, who has returned. And then Slaughter attacks Warrior, draping him onto the second rope, and behind the referee's back, Randy Savage takes his scepter and breaks it over the head of the Ultimate Warrior. A replay that would be censored on WWF television for its graphic violence. Mm. And Slaughter hits an elbow drop and pins the Ultimate Warrior at 12 minutes and 47 seconds. The crowd is booing. The announcers are in shock. No music is played. The crowd begins chanting bullshit and gorilla.
No, they're chanting Hogan.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure they're not chanting bullshit. I don't think this 91 crowd was sophisticated enough.
Oh, there were bullshit chants back in the day. That wasn't a new thing.
It sounded more like Hogan to me, but... Yeah.
All right. Monsoon is convinced. Convinced. This was a DQ. This was a DQ, of course. Ultimate Warrior is still the champion. And to me, that made it. Because you... built up this kind of drama of Howard Finkel's announcement because we hadn't heard the music. And they would do this every once so often at like a big show where there would be a pin and the music would not play. Mm-hmm. And then the announcer would announce, it was like a secondary pop because you'd seen the pinfall and then you'd either gasp at the heel actually winning this or the babyface is in fact the winner. But in this case, Howard Finkel made the announcement and Sergeant Slaughter, your new WWF champion, Gorilla Monsoon, I think, tossed his desk into the audience in outrage. Gorilla Monsoon was just so good here, selling this, and Roddy Piper just disgusted that the WWF title has been taken hostage by this Iraqi sympathizer, and great. They were just livid at this announcement, and the crowd, they just got slaughtered the fuck out of there with the title.
Yes, absolutely. Just really great heat, obviously, as you would expect, and quite ballsy to really book this angle this far to put the title on somebody that was already quite controversial at the time.
A lot of heat, though, for this, but not one that you can really translate to be this gigantic business success that it was. I mean, you remember that they had booked WrestleMania 7 for the big Olympic Coliseum in L.A. They moved it to an indoor venue, and it did average. But not something that really sparked a giant amount of business.
Why do you think that was?
I think a lot of people were actually turned off by this. And this is one of those angles that, yes, it generated heat, but didn't generate people wanting to support the product or pay to see this guy be beat or to compete.
Mm.
So, I mean, there's always that fine line of trying to create heat and hopefully it translates to business. And this is, it's not like the Hogan Slaughter program is revered as this, you know, great drawing program, but the heat it generated on paper, it's, you know, it was a hot angle.
Mm-hmm.
From there, they pan through the audience. I don't know if you caught this. They just pan through and there was this woman just standing there. She was wearing this blouse and it was completely unbuttoned with just her bra hanging out. This looked so inappropriate.
Well, I didn't notice that.
Yes. Go back, folks. She's... Right after the Warrior Slaughter match, they pan the crowd. Maybe it's like, what is this woman wearing? I think she was like, maybe she was trying to get the Warrior's attention for later.
Yeah, she's trying to bait him.
So how do you calm the crowd down from Iraq defeating America? You send out Coco Beware and the Mountie. And this was not as heated a match.
No.
The Mountie character had just debuted this month, Jacques Rougeau being transplanted from the fabulous Rougeau brothers into this Mountie character, which did get its own criticism from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, who did not appreciate this depiction of them as a heel. Rougeau went for a bunch of leapfrogs, got caught by a punch. Mountie hits him with the cattle prod on the floor. Piper suggests that Mountie go see a therapist because he's not an actual Mountie and he's having an identity crisis. That would be the case, I think, for half the roster at this point.
You're not an actual cop.
Yeah. There's a jumping reverse elbow by Mountie, then a sunset flip by Coco for a two count. Piper asks if Mountie is goose-stepping in the ring.
It looked like he was doing something.
This is the most odd pay-per-view.
Gorilla explains that the Mountie has actually taken the time to go up to Canada to train in Mountie techniques.
Why?
To make him a better wrestler.
What, to arrest people on a horse?
No. I'm assuming he means hand-to-hand combat techniques that the Mounties use. Which, for the record, if you're not from Canada, I've never seen.
Have you ever seen a Mountie in hand-to-hand combat?
I've never seen a Mountie, period.
All Mounties should have shock sticks. Much more effective. Ask Sergeant Slaughter.
I'd say so. I've only seen Mounties in Canada Day celebrations. In Ottawa. I've never seen a Mountie actually police the streets. I don't know if they do.
Is that Paul Gross played a Mountie?
Yeah.
On TV?
Yes.
There was no outrage over that. Maybe because he was a babyface.
Yeah.
Anyway. The top rope drop kick by Coco looked very good. Actually lands on his feet after this drop kick. And Piper yells, "Damn it!" when Coco goes for the pin and doesn't hook the leg. And then Piper apologizes for his language.
Can't say damn it.
We can rip up a flag, but you say damn.
Yeah.
That's crossing the line. Coco runs into a sidewalk slam and Mountie pins him 9 minutes and 12 seconds. Again, a bit long here.
No, boring match.
Yeah, not much to write home about. Sean Mooney's in the back with Randy Savage and Sherry. calls it a heinous act what they did. And Randy Savage says that he has always been the WWF champion and says to let him cry. And now he's going after Slaughter, and he runs out the door and just bangs on these doors in the background as Mooney does his throw back to Monsoon and Piper. And this is when Monsoon and Piper, they're at their desk. What a setup they had here. There was a lamp, and they had a telephone at their announce post.
A lamp and a telephone,
sure. What do you need a telephone if you're on the air?
To talk to the truck.
Maybe it's like our setup here where they need the phone when they're doing voiceovers. So with the talkback.
Oh. No one listening is going to get that.
No.
I barely get it.
Okerlund is then with Slaughter and Adnan. And Slaughter says he has no bounds, unlike the military. And he has just begun to fight. And Adnan adds his own... I don't know if he's translating or he was cutting his own promo. I am unaware. I enjoyed Adnan. Great character. Monsoon calls Slaughter the ultimate puke. And Piper is outraged.
Piper, about to pop a blood vessel for sure.
He's very angry.
2 hours in the show and he's still at his usual energy levels.
I couldn't believe like his voice holding up for a pay-per-view. Like, yeah. It's one thing to cut a promo at doing a Piper promo, but quite another to be, I mean, this guy was just on all decibel levels throughout this pay-per-view.
He was on things.
What grade would you give Piper, having heard him for the first time do a pay-per-view?
I thought it was too much, the point where, I had to watch the show on headphones because I didn't want to bother people around me. I started to get a headache, and I can't say I recommend it. I can't say I prefer it.
Then they went to some pre-recorded messages from fans wishing the soldiers overseas the best, including from a 6-year-old child. And I don't want to accuse the WWF of anything, but the messages all sounded like identical to the point that I really feel I question how politically savvy a 6-year-old child would be on the Iraq conflict.
Well, what is there to question? I mean, just imagine somebody coming up to you and saying, hey, do you have any messages to give to our troops overseas? What else are you going to say? Everybody's going to say the same thing. I don't think you should be fighting this war. I'm against it. And that's all. Yeah. I don't wish you luck.
You describe it like that. I see it as well as I just have this vision of a WWF producer coaching a 6-year-old on what to say.
I highly doubt that. If anything, it would be the
parent. This kid's coming up with this on his own.
It would be the parent, probably. It wouldn't be a...
Very weird.
Wouldn't be a producer telling somebody to say that.
Whatever. Monsoon says that Hogan was set to go on a tour of Saudi Arabia, but the Department of Defense said he could not go, and instead he was going to start a tour of all the United States military bases beginning on Monday. Then we got promos for the Royal Rumble, the second biggest conflict going on in the world, this one being taking place in a ring. We heard from Jake Roberts, Earthquake, Greg Valentine, Texas Tornado, The Legion of Doom, The Undertaker, Jim Duggan, Rick Martel, British Bulldog, Mr. Perfect, and Tugboat. I always enjoyed these promos before the Rumble.
I love these. Everybody showcases their promo ability, their characters, and their motivation.
And gave me just enough of an ounce of belief that maybe Tugboat could win it.
And they do it in 15 seconds, one after the other. No music, no production, just pure talking in front of a camera. I wish they would do it every year.
These are always highlights. And at this point, Wei, this was before the Rumble had the stipulation that the winner would get the title shot, and thus more believable that an Earthquake could win it.
Right.
Versus future years where you knew it was kind of down to a couple of core guys. Mm-hmm. And Piper calls this the greatest pay-per-view he has ever been a part of. Ever, 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 ever.
Okay.
Good for him. And said he had lunch with Virgil recently, and they were teasing his turn. And before I watched this pay-per-view, Wei, I watched this 8-minute Royal Rumble report that aired on one of the superstars leading into this. And they were just going through all the matches and stuff, and they had this promo with Ted DiBiase wearing a cowboy hat with Virgil on this ranch and running down the Rhodes family. And he walks into some cow manure or something, and he just looks at Virgil to clean his shoe. And Virgil, it was like he didn't say a word. It was just his eyes and the facials where you could tell this turn was mapped out and it was just building and building. And he had to reluctantly get on his knees and clean the shit off his shoes. So good. Ted DiBiase is like, not that I'm breaking news here, one of just the best heel characters. He was so good.
Yeah.
And you just felt for this guy, Virgil. Mm-hmm. And what he had to do to just kind of stomach this.
Yeah.
And literally, he had to almost swallow shit here for this guy for money.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Mooney is with Ted DiBiase and Virgil. And again, it's Virgil's facials here. He's teaming up with Ted DiBiase to take on Dusty and Dustin Rhodes. And you can just see he's growing tired of DiBiase.
The real Virgil.
The real Virgil. Oh, yeah. I didn't even connect the dots there. The inspiration behind the man.
And Virgil versus Virgil.
Wow. And DiBiase says, there's only one bond that's thicker than blood, and it's money. Good promo here. And we go to that tag match. And at this time, Dusty would have been 45 years old, and Dustin was 21 at the time. A youngin.
That's younger than Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, and this was this was the last pay-per-view for Dusty, for the WWF, and really he would head back to WCW, but was pretty much, this was the end of his full-time performing in the ring. And the Rhodes family, they clear the ring, with Dusty hitting Ted with a bionic elbow. They get Dustin in their corner. Virgil wraps Dustin's knee around the post. They work him down, double-teaming Dustin, who gets out of the way, and Virgil accidentally clotheslines Ted DiBiase. Virgil apologizes to Ted, and Ted attacks Virgil, sending him to the floor. As Dusty gets tagged in, Dusty runs into the corner, misses DiBiase, and DiBiase rolls up Dusty for the win in 10 minutes. But the big split here, which had been teased for a long time, finally came to a head here, and then they would face off Ted DiBiase and Virgil at WrestleMania 7. But you can just see that they had this mapped out for a long time to be the WrestleMania match and building it up.
I thought they did a really good job trying to tell a slave owner story without actually doing it. And this was about as close as they could get. Even at one point, Monsoon accidentally says, there's Virgil saving his master. At least that's what DiBiase thinks. But really, I thought some really good storytelling here. It's too bad Virgil, after he broke off, didn't really have enough charisma to really break off on his own. But I thought in this initial point, there's just a ton of heat for this angle and a lot of good reaction for Virgil to break out. Virgil Unchained.
We should have tried to get Virgil on the show. Chat about this angle.
Oh, wouldn't happen.
I'm just not interested.
No.
I'll just be honest. I'm not interested in talking to you. DiBiase gets on the microphone after the match and says that no one crosses the $1 million man without paying, calls Virgil an idiot, asks him to get his belt and put it around his waist. Virgil comes in, drops the title on the floor. DiBiase says, pick it up. Think about your family and your mother. And Virgil picks up the belt and pops him in the head with the belt shot. So great angle, I thought, between these two. And these two have been together for years. So it's not like this was just, you know, you're 6 months together and split them up. It was like this was a long time that they had built this up and finally sent Virgil into a singles run. That you're right. Not too remarkable. Okerlund is with Hulk Hogan in the back for one of my favorite Hulk Hogan interviews ever.
Hold on, Hulk. I hate to interrupt you. We are getting, and I can't believe this, an unconfirmed report that the new World Wrestling Federation champion, Sergeant Slaughter, has just defaced the American flag. Now, that could just be a rumor.
Mean Gene, let me tell you something. Sergeant Slaughter stealing the WWF title is one thing. But if Sergeant Slaughter has gone so far to deface Old Glory, to deface the Red, White, and Blue, brother, I don't care if it's legal or not, brother. Sergeant Slaughter, that would be the fate that would seal you in for good. And no matter what happens, Mean Gene, Sergeant Slaughter's reign as the WWF champion is going to be just like... You know what, brother?
I know exactly what...
It's going to be just like Saddam Hussein's reign over Kuwait, brother. It's going to be only temporary.
Thank you, Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. He dedicates this match to the troops and says that he has the Army, Navy, and Marines behind him. And then Okerlund, in his earpiece, gets an unconfirmed report that Slaughter has just defaced the American flag... but that could just be a rumor. And Hogan just says, no, that could not be possible, no. And he then blanks on Saddam Hussein's name. It then comes to him, Sudan Hussein, and says that Slaughter's reign, much like Hussein's, will be a short one. You know what I'm talking about?
Sudan Hussein.
Sudan.
This is a truly awkward segment. I'm sure a lot of people have probably already seen this one on YouTube.
I assume this was, you would have thought this was a taped promo.
That's what I always thought.
And they would have just redone it.
That's what I always thought.
It's like a TNA call.
Yeah.
Just run it as is.
No, maybe this was live.
Maybe it was. I'm surprised. So that takes us to the Royal Rumble. 30-man Rumble here. And, we're not going to go, obviously, spot by spot, but we'll look at the highlights.
There's really not many spots to call in a Rumble match.
This was one, though. I always use my little trusty stopwatch here. This was, like, as legit a Rumble in terms of, like, usually they'll shave off the time and they'll, you know, some are two-minute intervals, but they'll play around with the times. These were, like, 2 minutes on the dot for, like, every entrance. This was, like, legit. They were a little off when they were talking about how long guys were in the ring for. But overall, this match went, Jesus Christ, it went well over the hour. It went an hour and 5 minutes. Started off with Bret Hart and Dino Bravo. Two Canadians starting it off. Greg Valentine was in, who had a real, real long run in the Rumble. Attacking a fellow heel, Bravo.
I always wonder how they choose these guys. Like, choose the guys to stay in the Rumble the longest. Is it maybe just a matter of circumstance, or I think it's sometimes that
you'll go with guys that can kind of probably have good heads on their shoulders. That if, like, this is a complicated match at times for guys. It's not like your traditional battle royal where you know who's winning. It's like you got to plan certain spots, and you like to have those guys that can kind of call the match. You kind of want to go with that. I think you want to have kind of a veteran presence there. And you also, typically, the WWE now, they'll throw in one guy that they want you to focus on, and they'll a younger guy they're bringing up that might have that long run, you know, throughout the Rumble. That's almost like a mini storyline, not winning it, but lasting long.
But as far as a push here, I mean, of all the people to last, I think Martel and Valentine and even Bret to an extent, but like those two guys, they weren't really pushing at all.
No, not really. Martel, they were kind of, you know, he was a singles heel.
But not as a baby not face.
Not as a baby face, but he's fit. He's fit. He can last long. Valentine is, he's just there. I don't know about Valentine. Roma was in fourth. Fifth, the Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich. To me, one of the biggest revelations I had as a wrestling fan was learning that this guy, after his motorcycle accident in the late 80s, had his foot amputated. I don't care what you say. You cannot watch one of this guy's matches and be able to tell a thing that this guy is working without a foot. That's incredible.
I've never seen much of any Kerry Von. I've seen a little, but I've not seen much of him prior to the accident. So I don't know enough to be able to tell. I imagine people who've studied his career are able to tell. But you wouldn't be able to tell that this guy was wrestling basically on an amputated foot.
It's insane. He was in there for a decent amount of time. Then Rick Martel came in sixth. And then, Wei, I want to get your thoughts. It was very brief. Tony Atlas, a.k.a. Saba Simba, coming out seventh. One of the more offensive gimmicks in wrestling history.
I would
have his spear, though.
Did he have his mask?
I don't think he came out with any of his garb.
Yeah, he didn't have his mask either. So, yeah, I would certainly
say. Lost without that spear. How's he going to hunt? How's he going to eat?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he's just another somebody else who needs psychotherapy. Somebody who just thinks he's a savage.
Bushwhacker Butch was eighth in. Got a surprisingly big reaction. Simba tried to toss Martel out, but got reversed. And
was Saba Simba a heel or babyface?
Simba was a babyface.
He was.
I believe.
Okay.
Again, I wasn't watching at this time. Wasn't someone's career who I've really narrowed in on.
Saba Simba.
But Simba was, I believe, the first elimination of this Royal Rumble.
No, Dino Bravo.
Oh, was Bravo already out here? Okay, yeah, you're right. Anyway. Ninth in was Jake Roberts, who was feuding with Rick Martel at the time after he had been blinded, and this would lead to the blindfold match at WrestleMania. And Roberts and Martel, they fought right away. Crowd was very hot for that interaction. And Martel just goes to the floor under the bottom rope, where we got a glimpse of a young Shane McMahon refereeing.
Yes, who's actually counting them out. Yeah. Which is something that I feel like they should be doing anytime somebody does this. ducks underneath the bottom rope to walk around.
Well, that really screws with Rumble history and Vince McMahon's win.
Yeah, which is, I always thought that was bullshit. I just think it's bullshit. You shouldn't be able to go outside for a break.
I remember being outraged that your Vince McMahon won. I was like, ah, you're putting Vince McMahon over the Royal Rumble. I thought it was just sacrilege. Yeah. 10th in was Hercules, who amazingly here, according to my calculations, he was in this one for like 38 minutes.
Wow.
And the most unremarkable 38-minute run in a Rumble ever, I think, because you wouldn't have even noticed this guy was in the ring. Mm. 11th was Tito Santana, star of the MMA Report last week. And Roma dives at Roberts and is eliminated. That was an elimination they really kind of overdid in this one. The dive at the guy who ducks and the guy gets eliminated. Never dive at guys who are leaning against the top rope in a Rumble. Easy strategy here. Right along with putting a guy in the corner and lifting a leg up above the top rope, that never eliminates anyone. No one has ever been eliminated through that process. And yet, every time, it's get him in the corner and then lift the leg up above one top rope and then I'll get the other one off and that'll just flip them over. Come on.
It makes logical sense, but you're right. It doesn't work.
Number 12 was the recently debuting Undertaker, who was still managed by Brother Love at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Where that character would have gone had Brother Love been attached with him for much longer and they hadn't connected him over to Paul Bear. I mean, maybe he still would have gotten to where he was, but this was a character that you want to tell me one that in a 10 million years I would have never predicted would have got to where he was. It was this guy. Like, this to me was 3-year gimmick tops.
Yeah, at this point he was only a zombie, basically. He didn't really have much going for him.
Hadn't even started the streak yet by this Rumble.
No, but it was absolutely the evolution and the way that they were able to make over the character multiple times that really, you know, made him last.
Taker was the one to eliminate Bret Hart, who was number one after Bret was in there for about 20 minutes. 13 was Jimmy Snuka, and this is when Taker eliminated Butch. British Bulldog was 14th, 15th was Demolition Smash, and this was where Martel sends Jake Roberts over the top to the floor and would prolong that feud, continuing on to WrestleMania. Road Warrior Hawk was number 16, and then 17th, a tremendous youngster, as Gorilla Monsoon labels him, Shane Douglas.
Dynamic dude.
We've kind of, over the last month, we've gone through all of Shane Douglas's probably least memorable runs.
You're absolutely right.
Yes.
We followed him from we followed him from Dean Douglas to XPW.
Yes.
And now to this little known appearance.
An unsuspecting little thread we've created here with Shane Douglas.
Yeah. All we just got to do is WCW run.
Yeah, with Torrey Wilson.
Yeah.
Tornado and Snuka, they got eliminated by The Undertaker. Then number 18 counted down, and no one came out, which they would at least explain later. So this was a 29-man Royal Rumble.
Yep.
Number 19 was Animal, and Hawk and Animal eliminate The Undertaker, but then Hercules sends Hawk out. 20th was Crush. 21st was Jim Duggan. 22nd was Earthquake, who was a very much pushed heel at this point. He was coming off that SummerSlam match with Hogan from the prior year, which did very well. Earthquake was, this was probably his career peak, was this 1990 to 91 period. Then, I am glossing over Shark, Avalanche, and Golga, but with all due respect. 23rd, Mr. Perfect, who came out with, Bobby Heenan. And back body drops Duggan out of the Rumble. Then 24th was Hulk Hogan, who comes in, runs wild, sends out Smash.
Has Hogan ever drawn earlier than 20?
Not that I'm aware of.
This guy has the best luck.
Yeah, some of those guys do. It's amazing. Well, guy who's limited, getting a late spot in the Rumble.
I can't see Hogan being number one in wrestling a 60-minute Rumble.
I would love to see it. Yeah. I'd love to see it.
Well, especially today.
Oh, God. 25th was Haku, who years later would be that big surprise entrant in the Rumble. WCW Hardcore Champion showing up in the Rumble.
That is right.
Then 26th was Jim Neidhart, who just sprinted to the ring. I would say Jim Neidhart's career peak as well right around this time.
Yeah.
Maybe a little earlier.
Maybe, yeah.
Hart Foundation. Then 27th was the infamous In-N-Out by Bushwhacker Luke, who marched into the ring, was taken to the other side by Earthquake, and eliminated right away, where he went to the floor and marched away, a record that would stand for years before Santino Marella beat it.
Hmm.
But this was always one of the Rumble moments that they would cite, Bushwhacker Luke, who we had that memorable interview with.
Was he the one who licked your face?
Yep.
And have you taken care of that? You've done your tests? Everything's okay?
Came out clean.
Good.
Yes.
Right.
28th was Brian Knobs. And Monsoon and Piper list the guys. This I hated. We had two guys left. And part of the Rumble is like, you're always kind of, who's going to be number 30 or who's coming out next? Monsoon and Piper like, well, who haven't we seen yet? And then they go off and, well, we haven't seen Randy Savage. We haven't seen the Warlord. Mm. I was like, fuck. Like,
too logical.
To their credit, Savage didn't come out. But nonetheless, it's like, I hated that. This is when Hercules was finally eliminated after 38 minutes. Then 29th, the Warlord.
Yeah.
One of my cult favorite wrestlers. Numerous Scott Putski nominees on this show. This was 1991. Yep. This was the Putski period.
This was pre-trial?
Yes. This was the year Zahorian went on trial in the 92 and all those allegations would come out.
Would you care to name a winner?
Boy, Warlord's up. Let's quickly scan these. Okay. I'm going to throw out a few names for you. Okay?
I'm going to say
let's not forget this undercard, okay? We had like Barbarian. Yeah. Ultimate Warrior.
I thought Rick Martel was looking pretty.
Martel was jacked.
Well.
Paul Roma was jacked. Yeah. I mean, Saba Simba.
British Bulldog.
Jesus Christ. Jimmy Snuka. Hawk and Animal. I mean, these are guys that have most who have gone on the record. Oh boy.
Oh, let's give it to Warlord.
Warlord in
might as well.
He was at another level.
Honestly, they all deserve it.
I know. There are lots of candidates here.
Oh, yeah. Warrior was here, too.
Hogan eliminated Crush here. This is when they brought up that Martel has set a new record of length in the Rumble. Hogan then clotheslined Warrior to the floor, and then number 30 was Tugboat. And they explained that Randy Savage had drawn number 18, but they draw the conclusion that the Ultimate Warrior got to Randy Savage and chased him out of the arena to build that one up. So at least giving you a logical out for why Savage wasn't there.
Yes. The way they explained it, though, was very realistic, like how somebody would do it if this was a real sporting event. But it didn't really make for such a dramatic moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, that's fine.
And that was the direction they were going with Savage and Warrior. Douglas was then eliminated. Hogan dumped out Tugboat. Bulldog drop-kicked Perfect out. Martel then eliminated Neidhart. Bulldog back body-dropped Haku. They just had a huge slew of guys. Eventually, it came down to our final four of Hogan, Martel, Earthquake, and Knobs. Knobs making it to the final four. Wow. Mm-hmm. Martel... Sorry, it was Bulldog who eliminated Martel after 53 minutes. And then Earthquake and Knobs send Bulldog over with a double hip toss. Then Knobs and Earthquake, they double-teamed Hogan. Hogan avoided the Earthquake splash, eliminated Knobs, and then hit the big boot to Earthquake, knocked Jimmy Hart off the apron, goes for a scoop slam, but Earthquake lands on top. Hogan hulks up, hits the big boot, then successfully hits the scoop slam, and sends Earthquake over 1 hour, 5 minutes, 13 seconds, pretty lengthy Rumble. And then afterwards, Hogan celebrated in the ring. He grabbed a bunch of signs, including ones that read, Hulk rules, peace in the Middle East, and then Saddam and Slaughter will surrender. Yay, Hogan. Hogan has won the war.
Yep. So, yeah.
That was the Royal Rumble, 1991. Quite an interesting show to watch, just because of the subtext of the entire event and the backdrop.
A lot of politics involved in this particular show. As a show itself, I didn't think this was one of the better Rumbles, in my opinion. I just didn't see many storylines in throughout. It just seemed like one entrant after another. I give the show overall a 6 out of 10.
I'll go so far as to say a 7. I agree. The Rumble wasn't one of your classic Rumbles, but I really enjoy it. Savage and Sherry were awesome on this show. The heat for the world title change was really great. The opening tag match I enjoyed quite a bit. I'll go 7 out of 10. And you got some, like, some Iron Man performances in that Rumble, but I really find the lack of having that prize for winning the Rumble. It kind of just, to me, it's something that match really requires it, you know, rather than just being you simply win the Rumble. And Hogan would get the title shot at Mania, but it wasn't advertised as such for this Rumble. So, and a very, very hot crowd in Miami, Florida. So those were our thoughts, everyone. And now we will head on over to the feedback on the message board. And
I'll start us off.
You start us off.
We go to Andrew Sheehy, who says, great choice for a review this week. I remember remember renting this event from a local video store as a kid, and I was impressed with it. The opening tag match between the Rockers and the Orient Express was a classic. The fast-paced action along with great storytelling made this one of the greatest pay-per-view opening matches in the history of pro wrestling. It's a shame that Shawn and Marty never got to be tag team champs as a team in the WWF. Excuse me. Boss Man and Barbarian was a surprisingly decent match, with the future Guardian Angel going over to set himself up for an IC title match against Mr. Perfect. The WWF title match between Ultimate Warrior and Slaughter was solid, with Randy Savage costing Warrior the belt. It set up a retirement match between the two at WrestleMania 7 a couple months later. The promo with Sherry and Warrior before that match on the show with the future leader of OWN saying no was great. A young Daniel Bryan must have gotten his catchphrase no, no, no by watching that. I give this show an 8 missed Scott Norwood field goals out of 10.
We go on over to Andrew McDonald. I've watched this pay-per-view a few times as I have the 91 Rumble as part of my Rumble box set. What a great item to have, considering I love the Royal Rumble match. This one, though, had a great undercard. The Epic Rockers versus Orient Express match is one that still holds up today. One of my first dramatic memories in wrestling was the barbershop window incident, which is probably something that six-year-olds wouldn't get to see. I also remember Marty Jannetty being the weak link of the team. The great dynamic of one team member getting beat down and then making the hot tag looked to a five-year-old Andrew McDonald as if Marty was the crappy member of the team and Shawn Michaels was a strong one. It's weird because that's generally the successful babyface tag team formula. But again, I was five and they were still teaming. Bossman the Barbarian also had an incredible big man match, and it was a great build for Bossman going through the Heenan family before getting to Mr. Perfect. It was also a great storyline with Bobby insulting Bossman's mama, and that's why Bossman wanted to get at Heenan. The Miz would have been huge during this time with the Your Mama jokes. The Ultimate Warrior also cut the best promo of his career. It was intense, well-spoken, and to the point. I'd love a video of John and Way doing an impression of the Warrior saying no to Sensational Sherry, or that could be the next contest. The Rumble match as well was pretty good, as most Rumble matches usually are. I did like the nice touch of Savage not showing up for his number, knowing that the Warrior was going to murder him the next time he saw him. Overall, great show. 8 WWF Championship winning elbow drops out of 10.
We go to Denise, who says, excellent choice for this week, an excellent match to kick off the 91 Rumble. The Orient Express Rockers match had it all. Fast-paced action, ring psychology, and time. This match is truly a hidden gem. Everything Savage did on the show had me laughing out loud. What a performer he was. Good match between Boss Man and Barbarian leading up to the Boss Man Perfect match at WrestleMania. The Warrior Slaughter match and the Rumble match itself served its purpose, led up to Hogan Slaughter at WrestleMania, and led to one of my all-time favorite matches in the Warrior Savage retirement match. This show kept me entertained from beginning to end with a hot crowd to add. Question, have you guys ever thought about doing a Scott Putski Lifetime Achievement Award? If so, I'd like to nominate the Warlord. Looking forward to the review. Take care. Well, I don't know who's in the lead right now. I think it would either be like Vince or
it's another
Luger.
List for Louis to compile.
Yeah.
Chris in Ottawa writes, wow, what a trip. My most vivid memory associated with this pay-per-view was a Rockers promo from Superstars where they said they'd make chop suey out of the Orient Express, and by God, they did. You can tell both teams had done this match dozens of times at house shows, and the polished product made for a great opener. I love Scary Sherry's promo. I can't think of a better woman on the mic than her, and Warrior's initial reaction to Sherry's advances had me rolling. I can't begin to tell you how much evil I thought Randy Savage was for putting a piece of crystal into Warrior's skull with that scepter shot. I could never buy Slaughter as a serious threat, though, because I was a smart enough kid to know that a rock was about to get squashed in the Gulf War.
We go to Bavin from New Jersey, who says, I have this in my collection, so since you guys are reviewing it, I decided to watch the show for the first time. I forgot this show featured the much-talked-about best opening match in Rumble history. I enjoyed the Rockers and the Express match. Everything that has been said about it is true. Great match, but can't help but think, why would a babyface even use a sleeper hold? The Sherry and Warrior segment was great. The sexual innuendos through the roof with this one, also with Warrior maniacally smiling while Sherry is on her knee expecting something glorious. I skipped the the show until the Rumble since I was low on time. I didn't want to sit through Sergeant Slobber versus the Warrior. Virgil finally becoming somebody, then going back to irrelevancy was great. I wish they would do all the opening promos to build up the case for all the talent on the show instead of goofy segments in the back like they did on this show. Hulk Hogan botching the ending of his intense oiled up promo. I loved it. Saddam Hussein. I forgot that Hogan won the Rumble, but wow, that ending was great, even though it was expected.
We go to a ROM. First of all, your opening theme just got even better. Did you hear our new theme last week?
No, I didn't.
Oh, well, you can check it out this week.
Okay.
I only remember...
Oh, because of... you put something in there. I get it.
Aram writes, I only remember Rumble for three things. Number one, a Putski nominated Tony Atlas as the African Warrior, Saba Simba. Two, a young Dustin Rhodes. Three, the great angle with Macho Man and the Warrior. I'm such a jaded wrestling fan nowadays that only the Rumble and WrestleMania are the events I look forward to. But at least the Rumbles are booked better, except for last year's Howler. Five Saba Simbas out of 10. By the way, a couple of questions. I got a little bit interested in comics after you guys have hyped it up. By the way, I saw a movie called Super, starring Rainn Wilson and Kevin Bacon. Quite amusing little movie, but I'm not into the typical comics that involve a superhero. Are there some out there you could recommend, except for The Walking Dead? Will you guys try to read the WWE Heroes comic book that came out a few years ago?
Comic books that don't involve superheroes. I mean, I've always been talking about Saga. I don't know if you'd consider that a superhero book or not, but it's certainly not Spider-Man or anything. As far as other ones, I'm sure I could list more off the top of my head, but I really do just like most of the things I read are superhero things. I mean, you know, I don't think there's any shortage of non-superhero stuff, though. I mean, all the Image books right now are doing really well, so you should go ahead and check some of those out.
There you go.
And what about this WWE Heroes comic book, John? Are you going to read it?
I have not. I'm not very... I remember when they came out with these, and I think I might even have an issue somewhere if I haven't thrown it out.
Somebody sent me a link to WCW comic book
from
early 90s, and it featured like a panel with Jim Ross and Paul Heyman and Missy
Hyatt. Oh, yeah. You were showing me that.
In comic book form, and it was just the most bizarre thing.
Yeah, well, in the late 90s, they came out with like a Mankind, Undertaker, and Steve Austin comic series, and... I think, like, one of them saw a second issue, and then they were...
I mean...
I don't think they went very long.
Certain things exist on their own. Why do we need to... Come on. I think certain things combine well. Like, video games and pro wrestling combine greatly. Comic book and pro wrestling, no. No, because...
Undertaker and Kane could have a great comic book.
No, I don't think so. I mean, because, like, pro wrestling... is already fantasy enough, and to translate it to a 2D world where pro wrestling is just weird because like it's some of it's fake and some of it's real, but you can believe that it'll happen in real life because you're seeing it in real life. Whereas when you get into the world of comic books, you know anything can happen. It's not as believable. We go to Jack Niehaus, who says, hey guys, life has been crazy, and it's been close to a year since I've posted anything. I started listening to the shows about a couple weeks ago again, and now I'm back in the swing of things. Well, glad to have you back. This event always is a great place in my memory, and when I was getting back into wrestling at 97, this was the first of many pay-per-views that we rented from the local grocery store's VHS section. I must have watched this pay-per-view a dozen times. That it was great reliving a... lot of the early 90s WWF era. I was only around 5, around 91, but I distinctly remember watching those old matches with my Hulk Hogan, Jake Roberts, and Big Boss Man figures at the time. That Ultimate Warrior Slaughter match was actually one of my favorites of the Warriors as a kid, and for some reason it still even holds up in an old-school charm sort of way. Maybe it's my nostalgia for always watching the old video of this event constantly, but it's amazing how much most of it still holds up for me. I really enjoyed this Royal Rumble event as it featured a good portion of the early 90s roster that I still love so much. I was perfectly fine with the finish as Hulk Hogan was as hot as ever around 91.
Alan Gaynor writes, once again, the Mountie versus Coco Beware match is getting no love. The match was left off the original VHS release, and I don't think it has been mentioned in the feedback once so far. Coco is a WWE Hall of Famer, something Kato or Virgil cannot claim to be, at least not yet. Aside from the Coco Mountie encounter, my other most vivid memory from this event is the heat that Slaughter had at the time. I used to watch WWF pay-per-view events as a kid at a restaurant during this time frame, but didn't get to see this one live due to it being shown on a Saturday night instead of Sunday afternoon as as was customary. Good thing I didn't, as my sister, who worked at the restaurant, told me that people started arguing after Slaughter's win and a fight broke out. I don't recall many characters' angles since then drawing such passion out of people, so I guess my MVPs of this event are Slaughter and Coco Beware. God, I wish, like, cell phone cameras were around in 91 stuff like that.
We go to Quixote, who says, I started getting into wrestling in the Hulk Hogan rock and wrestling era. The cartoons, the awesome action figures, the crazy gimmicks. I was hooked. I think that is what the WWE is trying to do now to a certain degree. We go, and then he says, I was always a sucker for the Rumble. I would often reenact a Rumble with my LJN figures. I guess I like the surprise of who's next and even the feuds of people who never usually fight with each other. Looking back at this event, a few things come to mind. How the hell did Cody Rhodes avoid the belly curse of his father and brother? Amazing he is in the shape he is. Newfound respect. Tugboat, what a lame gimmick. What did I ever see in him? The crowd loved the Bushwhackers. Just watch the arms flailing. Even when one was in for 5 seconds. Awesome. Did you notice how Mr. Perfect threw the towel over his shoulder and Heenan catches it behind his back? Perfect. The fan looking rejected when he tried to get that towel after Perfect was eliminated. Not a fan of Hulk, but grabbing the signs after the match is pretty cool. Great.
BB from GR. When I was a kid, my mother would buy me a WWF VHS once a week, which I got on Fridays after school. As a result, my Friday evenings often consisted of a friend and I watching the new VHS and playing some video games on Super Nintendo. Even though I was only 6 at the time, I can clearly remember my first watch of this pay-per-view. I've always thought that the opener was a fantastic match, the teams had great in-ring chemistry, and the finish was pretty innovative for its time. I was a huge Warrior fan in my youth and remember being pretty devastated that he lost the title to that traitor, Sergeant Slaughter. The shot that Savage delivers with the scepter always seemed pretty brutal. Lastly, the Rumble match itself. If I recall correctly, the model sets the then record for spending the longest amount of time in the match. I really enjoyed the combination of Monsoon and Piper handling the commentary and rooted for the Hulkster to overcome Earthquake. My Scott Putski Award nominees included Texas Tornado, the British Bulldog, Ultimate Warrior, and Saba Simba, but there was one candidate that stood head and shoulders above all others, the Warlord. This guy looks insane, and I was astounded at the speed at which he was able to run to the ring. Give this pay-per-view 7 Warlords out of 10.
We go to our next piece of feedback, and this person says, the match of the night for me was the tag team of DiBiase and Virgil against the Rhodes family. When Virgil hit the Million Dollar Man with the Million Dollar Belt after the match, it was one of the biggest pops for me in wrestling when I was a youngster. You don't get those pops as much today. Wrestling storylines today are not given a fair share of time. The Rumble match itself was pretty decent, and if I remember well, it was the last Rumble that the title did not have any application for the winner. Instead, during those days, it was more important to have better record time in the Rumble. All in all, I give this event 8 steroid freaks, Bulldog Warrior, Warlord Hogan, The Barbarian, Rick Martel, Texas Tornado, and Saba Simba out of 10. On a side note, the excellent podcast that you guys deliver each week has helped me a lot through this tough separation I'm having with my spouse. Thank you and keep up with the great work. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm glad we can bring some bad wrestling into your life.
Gets you over.
Wrestling is always there.
It is.
Bad or good.
David Warden writes, hi guys, thanks for choosing this show. Agreed on the intro to this event. Vince at his absolute best. Rumble 91 was not a bad show, but like most of the pay-per-views from this period, in hindsight, it looks like something of a missed opportunity. As a fully pledged little warrior, I was disgusted to see him surrender his title so meekly, especially as I clearly remember my 7-year-old self believing this to be my favorite warrior look ever. For some reason, I loved seeing him in those white trunks, and for the Hulkster, now needing to be draped in the stars and stripes to guarantee his pop, get the title shot by winning the Rumble again. I know it was a different time, and house show income was Vince's main concern, so he saved the Warrior Slaughter rematches for those, but seriously, setting up Hogan versus Slaughter for Mania? No wonder they had to move it to the LA Arena. Why on earth did they not have Warrior versus Hogan 2 at WrestleMania, or at least if they felt they had to, give the Iraqi sympathizer gimmick to someone a bit more menacing than Old Man Slaughter? One more thing. When you look at the final 10 guys in the Rumble match, you see just how much power Hogan had in the Fed at the time. Duggan, Tenta, heck, even Knobs is still there at the end. It's something that tainted the product back then and something I never thought would have ever happen again. Now seeing Cena literally conducting the roster on the Raw Christmas special, including even his main heel challengers, tells me that unbelievably it has happened again, and it's so sad to see. And he gives us 6.5 Vince McMahon Dino Bravos out of 10.
We go to Benjamin, who says, the pay-per-view started off really strong with a tag team encounter between the Orient Express and the Rockers. The match was fun right from the get-go with some great tag team wrestling from both teams. The pace was really set high and the crowd was really getting into the match. The entire pay-per-view dripped with United States nationalism, which is no surprise due to the U.S. going into the Gulf War. Any foreigner going up against the U.S. team would have got shit on at this time, which is evident due to the cheering for the rest for a rest hold, a fun match to start off the pay-per-view. The Ultimate Warrior was more over than anyone could have been, and there's no better way to get over the disgrace a nation to get over than to disgrace a nation's flag that you're at war with. It's no wonder why Iraq hates the U.S. The only exception to that rule is abusing a woman.
Okay.
Odd to see that this match was just the way to build the retirement match between Warrior and Savage at Mania.
To go back at that time as well, I mean, a lot of people, you know, hold the Ultimate Warrior in this title run in very high regard. And yes, you know, to if you're basing it on reactions, you kind of, I think sometimes people will look at that as a sign of, you know, a guy being a successful champion. The fact was, the plan was to do Hogan Warrior that year at WrestleMania, but Warrior did not exactly light up business during that title run. His best run was with Rick Rude as the challenger, where Rude was just a very effective heel, but Warrior was not a big draw as champion, and it wasn't viewed as an overwhelming success at all, and that was why the decision was made to go with Slaughter over Warrior for that rematch at WrestleMania, and so that is what they did. We go on over to Luke from Harrison Hot Springs, BC. Longtime listener, first time poster. I remember being really excited every time the Rumble came around, although back then, even at the age of 6, I knew Hogan would win. The tag match was awesome. Rockers equals speed and high-flying and fun matches. If I could request a show, it would be WrestleMania 4, which we can throw into the big, ever-evolving thread.
Danny from Calgary, this was the first WWF pay-per-view I ever rented, albeit on VHS 9 months after it aired. At the time, I was a huge fan of the show. My opinion hasn't changed since the last time I saw it 17 years ago. The Rockers versus Bat Company, Orient Express would be match of the year candidate in this day and age. Solid pace from start to finish. The Sherry promo was hilarious. I guess you can't seduce a roid freak from parts unknown. The Big Boss Man versus Barbarian match was surprisingly strong for a big man match, and it had a story behind it. The Ultimate Puke promo was classic Sergeant Slaughter. The title match was kind of slow, but the finish was great. I love that even after the scepter shot, Slaughter found it necessary to deliver a small elbow to finish off Warrior. The Rumble match wasn't as exciting.
That's what did
as him in. Yeah, the elbow, yes. The Rumble match wasn't as exciting as I remembered it, though. This Rumble was full of Putski candidates. And he goes on to list all of them. And did you catch Road Warrior Animal almost running out like an idiot when number 18 came up? The Warlord, I did not notice that. The Warlord looked like a roided-up Stone Cold Steve Austin in those black trunks. And who will ever forget 4.8 seconds of Bushwhacker Luke?
All right, Trent from Texas. One thing that I would like to address here is how much better the actual wrestling is today and how much more athletic and smoother almost all of the current roster is today compared to then. The opening tag match for years was considered one of the best WWF matches of all time, but by today's standards, this was very sloppy and would be about par for your average tag match on SmackDown, yet the product felt way more important and the crowd was way more invested into the wrestlers and the product. The storylines were very well played out and had a slow burn and were memorable. The crowd was even heavily into Bossman and Barbarian despite it being very sloppy and awkward. Probably because they hadn't traded wins at least 10 times on free TV within the last year, and it felt important. I would go so far as to say more longtime fans remember the Mountie versus Coco Beware squash match better than the main event of Survivor Series 2 months ago. Piper was great on commentary. He was by far the best babyface color guy. Highlight of the event was by far Jimmy Hart talking smack to Frankie.
That was good. Finally, Tom from Boise, Idaho, who says, it seemed like in the early Royal Rumbles that there was always a hot tag team match to start off the event, and the 91 Rumble carried on this tradition. The Boss Man versus Barbarian was not a bad match at all. I did love the ongoing storyline of the Macho King wanting to face the winner of the WWE title match between Slaughter and the Ultimate Warrior. I also really enjoyed Slaughter calling Mr. Warrior the Ultimate Puke. The WWE title match was fine for what it was. It accomplished several things. First, getting the title off of the Warrior, having the ultimate heel in the company holding the title. Finally, starting what would turn to be a really good feud between Warrior and Savage, which would start out in a really good steel cage match from Madison Square Garden right after the Rumble. I assume Vince thought that the Gulf War would have lasted for a little while instead of just a few days. The Rhodes vs. Million Dollar Man and Virgil match I enjoyed, especially for pulling the trigger on one of the longest teases in WWE history, and the in the breakup of Virgil and Million Dollar Man. I believe there are several winners of the Scott Putski Award in this match that include, and he names them all as well. I would like
it's
to
the
give
the legacy of this show.
I would like to give the Bill Goldberg Jeff Hardy No Sell Award to The Undertaker. Yes, I know it was his gimmick, who had only been in the company since the past year's Survivor Series, and it was led to the ring by Brother Love. I would like to give an honorable mention to Hogan for sitting up right away after the Earthquake Splash, among other moves that were done to him by Earthquake. Bret Hart and his book did not have much to say about the 91 Rumble, except that he talked about Sergeant Slaughter's gimmick and what the boys in the back thought of it. Most thought Vince knew what he was doing, and they believed Vince would get 100,000 for WrestleMania at the LA Coliseum.
Oops.
How it didn't do much for himself. Davey Boy Smith and Jim Hart, he did talk about how Davey Boy came back to the WWE bigger. So there you go.
So thanks to everyone for your feedback from the message board. Lots of you recalling the 91 Rumble. I think Rumbles are probably, I think, what fans are the most nostalgic for when you look at earlier Rumbles. It's, I think, a general, you know,
yeah,
event remembered fondly by many.
Because all the guys show up from the era. They're like a class photo.
Yeah.
Every year.
That's a one way to look at it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a fun match. It's a fun match to follow. All right. That's going to wrap us up for this week, everyone. Let's look ahead to next week, Wei. And what do you want to watch next week in the morning, right before we do our review?
Well, let's continue our Royal Rumble look backs. And should we move down the list chronologically, you think?
It's up to you. Let's not do a too close one to 91. Let's vary up the time periods, whatever's there.
Looking at a request thread, we can go to the latest one.
The latest one. Okay. Well, we can do that.
Royal Rumble 2008.
2008. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Is that one you remember well?
I do remember that Rumble.
What was on it?
That was the infamous John Cena return.
Oh, okay.
A big surprise.
Yep, yep.
All right, well, we can review that one. I don't know. Madison Square Garden, no less.
Yeah.
Where the Hall of Fame will be this
year.
You
sound like you don't want to review this one.
No, I'm fine with that. Do you not want to review it?
I don't care.
Oh, okay. I don't care, Wade. Listen, I'll watch.
We could change it right now, just like we changed last
week. No, we upset Bosch, who was so excited about us doing 95. I don't want to swerve anybody this time. So we are going to review the 2008 Royal Rumble. Now, I'm curious if we'll get some backlash, because I remember the last time that 2008, I think, is the latest we have ever reviewed an event in terms of, and last time they were like, this can't be a review. This just happened. Now we are 5 years removed from this event. I think that's a safe time to go back and rewatch.
For wrestling events, we should have a cutoff. Well, what would you say the cutoff is?
It should be like a Hall of Fame, where you got to be retired for this many years before you're eligible for the Hall of Fame.
So would you say 5 years?
Well, if it's 5 years and we're going to be sticklers, technically, I don't know what the date of that show was.
Well, okay, come on. We can't be that precise. I can tell you the date. It was January 27th, so we wouldn't be making it.
Ooh.
So let's change it then.
No. are you cool to review the 2008 Royal Rumble?
Let's do it.
I remember that had Randy Orton, Jeff Hardy, which had so much momentum behind it.
We'll make an exception for this one. Yes, it's a tri-brand show. Raw, SmackDown, and ECW.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Raw and SmackDown and ECW under one roof.
Wonderful.
Okay. So that will be our review for next week, the Royal Rumble 2008. It could be our final Royal Rumble review of the season. We'll see.
Really?
No, maybe not. Maybe we'll do another one after it.
Oh, because the Rumble is the week right after.
Yes.
Right?
The Rumble is
on. You know what? Since it's just the last one we might do, we should change it. Is there another one that sticks out more to you? We got 95, 97, 98, 2001, 2003. Or we could just stick to 2008.
Let's just do 2008. I feel we've sold it now. We've like listed matches. We've talked.
I don't give a shit what we sell or not.
Well, wait. I say we either go with 2008 or we write them down and we draw it right.
Okay, let's draw it right.
Here, I'm going to. Okay, what were the...
we're going to
do... You said 1997.
95, 7, 8, 2001, 2003, and then 2008.
Okay. I've written them all down in no specific order. Okay. They're not in any kind of chronological order.
So
you are going to give me a number between 1 and 6, and that number is the one we are going to review.
The number that I'm thinking of is 4.5.
That's not fair. That's not a number.
Let me finish.
That means two reviews.
We're going to round up using the North American system, and so my pick is number 5.
Oh, shit.
Which is?
That means we're going to review the 1997 Royal Rumble.
And what's the oh shit? What's so bad about this one?
We're swerving now. We're swerving people.
Oh,
I think people are going to grow to hate this.
You wanted me to pick two. That's why you got to listen to the end.
Yeah. Well, there you go. We teased one direction. If there is such an outrage, if there is such a disgusting outrage, we will reserve the right to review 2008 the following week.
I really don't think people are going to get pissed off.
Way. It's a passionate bunch.
We've lost. Okay, so you lose
97. You know what? It makes sense because that was at the Alamo Dome, where lockdown is going to be in 2 months.
There you go. That's exactly why we did all this.
Okay, the 97 Rumble is what we are going to review next week. You can leave your feedback up on the message board. We gave out all of the details on Review a Raw this past Monday night for our annual Review Away Royal Rumble pool. So you can go back to listen to that. We are accepting your submissions now in all the key categories. It should be an announcement up on the message board. And then all you have to do is be a member of our message board to join, and then you can send me your picks via private message. And then you will be, it's free to join. Freeway.
Nice.
Amazing. Tons of prizes up for grabs. But you might want to wait till closer to the cutoff date because you don't know who's going to be in the Rumble, what rumors there's going to be, lots of stuff. So that is coming up. The annual pool.
I always look forward to it.
The pool is always fun. Okay, we're going to get on out of here. In the meantime, Review and Impact, we will be back on Friday with the MMA report, and then Sunday night on the Law, getting set for the Rumble, which is coming up in less than 2 weeks' time, no less. And you can also go download Review a Raw from Monday night at liveaudiowrestling.com, on iTunes if you subscribe to Live Audio Wrestling, and a musical song to go out with. Should we go out with Chris from Ottawa's selection here of Boys to Men, Motown Philly, which was released the same week of the 91 Royal Rumble.
Sure.
We don't have to.
Why don't we make a choice?
Okay. What would be your other option?
You want me to name 6 songs that were released the week of January 1991?
I would not be able to compile a list.
I would not either. So
okay.
Let's go out
with Motown Philly here. We're not gonna bait and switch Boys to Men. Okay, we're getting on out of here.
Before I have second thoughts and decide to review the 2008 Rumble, yes, let's get out of here.
All right, we will chat with you later.